This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Congress returns, the president speaks, Joe Kennedy declines. It's Wednesday, and time for a whiplash edition of The Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us for a roundup of all things political. And what a week. President Obama makes a high-stakes address to Congress tonight to try to reclaim the health care debate. We'll focus on the politics of health care in a bit. It's open season for the late Ted Kennedy seat in Massachusetts after nephew Joe Kennedy says he will not run. The press tells kids, be true to your schoolwork. New York City Democrats get set to nominate a long-shot candidate for mayor, and four, count them, four disgraced lawmakers try to reshape their images. Later this hour, Bill Keller of the New York Times on the dramatic rescue of a correspondent in Afghanistan that cost the lives of his translator, a British commando, and at least one Afghan civilian. But first, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
As always, we'll start with a trivia question.
Okay, well, since we're going to be talking about Massachusetts, and we will be talking a lot about Massachusetts, the State Attorney General Martha Coakley announced her candidacy for the Senate earlier this week to succeed the late Edward Kennedy. Massachusetts is one of many states that has never elected a female senator, but there are five states that have never elected a woman to the House or Senate. Name all five.
If you think you know all five, you got to get them all.
I know them.
All five.
Oh, you mean somebody else?
Somebody else,
okay.
Yeah. If you think of all five states that have never elected a woman to the House of Representatives or to the United States Senate, give us a call, 800-989-8255. The first person to name all five correctly will win a fabulous no-prize T-shirt. And in the meantime, there's an awful lot riding on President Obama's speech tonight, but in a few minutes, Anna Greenberg and Matt Contineni will join us to talk about the politics of health care. So let's start with Ken. With that open Senate seat in Massachusetts, and before we get to the special election in January or the real election of the Democratic primary in December, Massachusetts has got to decide whether there's going to be an interim senator.
Right, and they start today with a public hearing. It began about an hour ago at the State House. Obviously, they want to change the law. The way the law stands right now is that there will be a special election within 145 and 160 days after a vacancy for the Senate. And, of course, Ted Kennedy died on August 25th. So there is, as you say, there will be a primary on December 8th and a special election on January 19th. But they want to change the law. They want to give Governor Deval Patrick, a Democrat, the opportunity to appoint an interim senator to serve until that special election. One of the reasons the Democrats so desperately want that opportunity for an appointment is because right now, theoretically, if you count all the independents and things like that, the Democrats only have 59 votes in the Senate, minus Ted Kennedy, of course, and they need a 60th just in case that vote is needed. And it may very well be needed.
And you need 60 votes to avoid cloture, which is a word we're all going to learn anyway. But in the meantime, who is coming out of the woodwork to run for that Senate seat? Is Curt Schilling the favorite?
Well, he and his bloody sock, and of course, as a Yankee fan, we don't like to talk about Curt Schilling. But Curt Schilling, of course, is a registered independent who usually votes for Republicans. He supported President Bush over John Kerry of Massachusetts in 2004. He backed John McCain in 2008. He probably won't run, and the focus will probably be on the large and increasingly large Democratic field now that Joe Kennedy said he's not going to run.
And who's in that besides Martha Coakley, who we mentioned?
Martha Coakley announced. Stephen Lynch is a congressman, kind of a blue-collar slash moderate conservative from South Boston. He's already taken out nominating papers. Michael Capuano is another member of Congress who's also taken out nominating papers. They're talking about Ed Markey, member of Congress, Marty Meehan, the former member of Congress. Again, many people are waiting for either Vicky Reggie Kennedy, the senator's widow, who, of course, has said over and over again she has no interest, or Joe Kennedy, who announced last week that he will not run.
And, of course, Senator Kennedy, the late Senator Kennedy, was the chairman of the Senate Committee on Health. His staff played an important part in the health care debate that's still going on, of course, in Congress, and much more about that later. But nevertheless, his departure means, some musical chairs with Senate committees.
Right, exactly. And the person all attention seemed to be focused on was Chris Dodd, the Democrat from Connecticut. He is chairman of the Banking Committee, and he's very involved in consumer legislation. He's also in for a tough re-election battle next year, and the the feeling is whether he should take the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee chairmanship that Kennedy headed or stay at banking. It looks like at this hour he's probably going to announce that he'll stay with banking. And I think he's basically been running a very populist effort because he's in a tough re-election next year. He may talk about consumer fraud and things like that. Less headaches, I think, than health care. So it looks like that health committee will now be headed by Tom Harkin of Iowa, who will give up agriculture, and then agriculture may go to Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, who is also in a tough battle next year. I'm leaving little crumbs, so if you follow my steps, you can follow exactly
okay.
where I'm coming from.
In any case, there will be more on this on the Political Junkie blog, which Ken Rudin writes almost every day.
And I read it almost every day, too.
And that's at npr.org. In the meantime, let's see if we get some people with answers to our trivia question, and that is the five states in the union that have never elected a woman to the House of Representatives or to the United States Senate. And let's see if we can get some callers on the line. Let's go to Mike in St. Louis.
Hi.
Hi.
So I'm saying Utah, Nevada, Montana, North and South Dakota.
Well, I could say you're wrong on several things because South Dakota right now has a female member of Congress, Sandlin Herseth. Stephanie Sandlin Herseth, who's a member of Congress right now.
And I remember Jeanette Rankin.
And Jeanette Rankin, of course, Montana, and she was a beaut. Yes, I'm sorry. and the other states also. Nevada also had one, Barbara Vukanovich, and there's a Shelley Berkeley, who's a member of Congress from Nevada right now. So most of those are wrong.
All right.
But nice try, Mike. Thank you very much for that. Let's see if we can go next to Ann. Ann with us from Lutzen. Is that right, in Minnesota?
No, Lutzen.
Lutzen. Okay, I apologize.
Iowa, Delaware, Mississippi, Vermont, and Puerto Rico?
Well, you did very, very well, except Puerto Rico is not a state, so we need a fifth state there.
But other than that, you were pretty good,
Ann. You did very well, except we need one more state.
Nice try. Bye-bye. Let's go next to, this is Kevin. Kevin calling from Savannah in Georgia.
Utah, Idaho, Iowa, Alaska, and Hawaii.
Well, Alaska, of course, is wrong because we have a senator right now, Lisa Murkowski. Idaho is wrong. We had Helen Chenoweth there for a long time. And Hawaii, of course, we had Pat Saiki, who was a member of Congress for several years before she ran for governor. So that's wrong. So, Ann from Minnesota was the closest. We just need a fifth state.
Kevin, thanks very much. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Travis. Travis with us from San Jose.
Yes, I said Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina, Nebraska, and Virginia.
No. We had Leslie Byrne in Virginia. We had Liz Patterson in South Carolina, and I think did she say Nebraska? Because we
yes.
had Virginia Smith in Nebraska. So those are three that are wrong as well.
Okay, thanks, Travis.
Thank you.
Let's see if we can go next to.
How do I know this stuff?
I don't know. Tom calling from Ann Arbor.
Well, I think there are only four, Ken. Delaware, Iowa, Mississippi, and Vermont.
That's correct. You have four states, but there is a fifth state that has never elected a woman to the House or Senate. We need that fifth state.
And I think the key word
no,
is...
No, no, no. Don't give it away.
Oh, you only elected as opposed to serving.
That's correct.
Ooh.
Okay.
One more, Tom.
Well, I'm not sure.
That's not a state, like Puerto Rico.
Louisiana.
Nice try. Mary Landrew.
Mary Landrew, right.
Among others. Let's see if we go next to, this is Steve. Steve calling us from Anchorage.
Well, I think that gives it away. It's Alaska.
No, because Murkowski. Lisa Murkowski was elected. She was appointed, but subsequently elected.
That's right. Yep. That's right.
Nice try.
I'm
not sure this
Arizona.
Is kosher.
No.
That's it. All right. Nice try, Steve.
Gabriel Giffords is a congresswoman from Arizona right now.
Ben is calling from Flagstaff.
Hi. Huge fan of the show, guys.
Thanks.
See if I can decipher this. Delaware, Iowa, Vermont, Mississippi, and Missouri.
No, we have Clara McCaskill, who's a senator right now from Missouri.
And we had, this is another one that's close, email from John in Tucson, Delaware, Iowa, Mississippi, Vermont, and Massachusetts.
Well, we said Massachusetts because we had Margaret Heckler, who actually lost to Barney Frank in 1982. So we did have a female member of the House, but never the Senate. But we need somebody who was never elected in the House or Senate, the fifth state.
Let's go next to, we'll go to Henry. Henry with us from Margate in Florida.
Yes, it's Wyoming.
It's not Wyoming because we had not only we had Barbara Cuban, who was a member of Congress, but I think her successor is also a woman in Wyoming.
All right, nice try. Can Jeff get it? Jeff is calling from Philadelphia.
Please, Jeff.
All right, I'm just going totally out on a limb here. Delaware, Iowa, Mississippi, Vermont, and Texas.
Oh, come on.
No, we have Kay Bailey Hutchinson, who's a senator right now.
All right. All right, thanks, you guys.
We'll give somebody else a chance to call in with this, but we've got some more news to get to. And that includes, we mentioned four disgraced former politicians who are, well, some of them still current politicians, trying to repair their reputations, Ken, including Governor Sanford in South Carolina.
Well, Mark Sanford, of course, the latest news is that the Speaker of the House, Bobby Harrell, yesterday said that, that Mark Sanford should resign. Now, Bobby Harrell is one of the key Republicans who have not made an opinion, had a public opinion on what the governor should do, but the governor insists in saying that it looks premature. He's not leaving.
Rod Blagojevich has a book out.
He does. It's called The Governor, which is very clever, and he says that the snippets we've heard of these wiretaps, these government wiretaps, did not tell the whole story, and he says that at his trial, his perjury trial, which as his perjury trial, he would call President Obama to testify on his behalf.
Jimbo Trafficant called the citizens of Youngstown, Ohio, to his behalf.
Yes, that he was released from prison last week after 7 years of prison, and he's talking about perhaps running for the Senate. That's a possibility there. There are some people there, of course, in Youngstown, also known as Trafficant, who loved him, but there are a lot of people who are ashamed of the basically, Youngstown for the longest time was an ethics cesspool, and Trafficant was part of that. They do not want a return of Jim and Trafficant.
And finally, people thought Mark Foley could not sink any lower, but now he's gotten into radio.
Well, not only has he gotten into radio, but the name of his new radio show is called Inside the Mind of Mark Foley. Anybody who knows what happened to Mark Foley, his drastic fall from grace, would not like to know what's inside the mind of Mark Foley.
And we have a winner.
Oh, no!
We have Tran is sent by email, and he is successfully named the fifth elusive state of North Dakota. Can't explain.
Because Quentin Burdick, when he died, his widow Jocelyn was appointed to the seat but never was elected. North Dakota is the fifth state.
And Tran will get a Political Junkie t-shirt because we've got his email address.
Hi.
Ken, stay with us. We're going to be talking about the politics of healthcare. Stay with us. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It may not be quite make or break, but President Obama faces a tough challenge tonight when he delivers his health care speech to a joint session of Congress in prime time. He's got to explain what the health care overhaul will mean to Americans and convince them they need it. The latest polling shows 51% of Americans now believe that they disapprove of President Obama's handling of the health care issue. He's also got to appeal to Republicans in Congress, most of whom say they won't support an overhaul with a public option and may not support it anyway. He's got to bring together the various factions within his own party, too, and that may be even more difficult. He began his push to reclaim the health care debate 2 days ago when he addressed the AFL-CIO at a rally in Cincinnati.
I see reform where Americans and small businesses that are shut out of health insurance today will be able to purchase coverage at a price they can afford. Where they'll be able to shop and compare in a new health insurance exchange. A marketplace where competition and choice will continue to hold down costs and help deliver them a better deal. And I continue to believe that a public option within that basket of insurance choices will help improve quality and bring down costs.
And the president would be thrilled to get such cheers tonight before a joint session of Congress. Not likely. NPR political editor Ken Rudin is still with us, our always healthy political junkie. For the rest of this segment, we'll focus on the politics of health care. We want to hear from you. What do you want to see included in this health care bill? And we'll ask our next two guests if they think that'll fly in Congress. 800-989-8255. Email talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. With us here in Studio 3A is Anna Greenberg, a Democratic pollster, Senior Vice President of Greenberg Quinlan Rossner. Anna, always good to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
And Matt Continetti, Associate Editor of the Weekly Standard, is also with us here in 3A. Nice to have you back with us, Matt.
Thank you, Neil.
And as we heard in the clip of President Obama, Anna, he still says he believes the public option is an important part of any health care overhaul. He's not saying, though, it has got to be in there or else.
And that's deliberate. I think he is keeping all of his options open. Notice he also talked about an exchange, which is something that Senator Baucus has been talking about in his plan. One thing I would note, that's really interesting to me with all this controversy over the public option. In the latest Gallup poll, came out about a week ago, 55% of people support the public option, and actually all of the public polling all along have shown majority support for the public option. So in some ways, it's more controversial in Congress than it is among regular voters.
And is anybody in the Republican Party, Matt Cotton, prepared to vote for it?
Oh, I don't think so, because Republicans view it as a government takeover of health care, right? A Trojan horse for a single-payer system down the line. It seems to me like there are really two conversations going on there about health care. There's the conversation the president is having with the Congress, which is gets to the nuts and bolts of the legislation and, you know, how are we going to tweak this policy and how are we going to fix this social malady. And then there's the Republican conversation, which has been going on in town halls throughout the country for over the past summer, which is all about larger questions involving freedom and decision-making and the role that the state should play in various parts of our economy. And these two conversations are very different.
And to be fair, they're also talking about Waterloo.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely. And also the, how this is kind of a dividing line. This is, you know, Obama wins this battle and Republicans won't be able to stop him much else.
And Anna Greenberg, to be fair, there's also a debate within the Democratic Party. They're also talking to the president. And part of it has to do with whether the public plan is going to survive. And, well, an important Democrat in the House of Representatives, that's Steny Hoyer of Maryland, said yesterday, well, he likes the public option, but...
I'm not one of those that says if you don't have a public option, it's not a good bill. I think it's a very good bill. I think the public option makes it much better.
And Nancy Pelosi doesn't necessarily agree with him.
Well, I think you are going to see something that passes the House that has a public option, but you're already seeing signs, even from the progressive side of the House, of some softening on the public option. I don't think that's going to be the make or break on whether or not something passes Congress.
And Ken?
You know, I was going to say Max Baucus today, who will probably announce his plan within the week and probably submit it to the Senate Finance Committee a week after that, said today that, look, a public option is not going to pass the Senate. So Nancy Pelosi can very well say, yes, it has to pass the House, and it probably will. But, of course, when the Senate passes theirs without the public option, then comes that crucial conference committee.
And Matt Continetti, one of the key figures here is Olympia Snowe of Maine, the Republican, one of the members of the so-called Gang of Six on the Max Baucus's Finance Committee. And she's making noises that about something called a trigger. In other words, there would be no public plan unless the insurance companies who do not compete successfully, then 5 years from now, it would automatically kick in.
That's right. And, you know, that may be enough. This trigger may be enough to secure Snowe's vote for any reform legislation. They need that 60th vote in the Senate, of course. And that is if they don't go for a reconciliation, if they don't try to
A reconciliation pass this. Is that parliamentary maneuver whereby they can get this passed with 51 votes.
That's right. But I think the larger issue here is public opinion. As you noted in your introduction, at the moment, more Americans disapprove of Obama's handling of this issue than approve of it. And what we're going to see tonight is his attempt to kind of retake the argument.
Ken?
Matt, following up on that point, who won August? I mean, we're always talking about who won the month at a time. And, of course, a lot of people said, well, you know, you heard a lot of crazy-sounding people with misinformation screaming and yelling at town hall meetings. But at the same time, you saw Barack Obama, President Obama's numbers significantly go down, his job approval numbers. Who won August?
Well, I think you can make the case that this grassroots or the astroturf, whatever you want to call it, this movement, this Tea Party movement, this anti-Obama, anti-spending, anti-government movement that you see at these town halls, they effectively shifted this debate that we're having to the right over the course of the summer. And in so doing, I think they've come across with the stronger hand. That's not necessarily the Republican Party. I think a lot of the people at these town hall meetings are not partisan Republicans.
I have to disagree. And I would look at two pieces of evidence. I would argue, Ken, that it was a draw. Two pieces of evidence. First, if you just look at people's self-report about how these town hall meetings affected them, about 60% in the Gallup poll said they had no impact whatsoever on them. About 20% said favorable. 20% said made them more, you know, less favorable. But if you look at public opinion over August, and I'm not talking about measuring June to July to August, I'm talking about the month of August, everything was stable, but particularly on health care. And remember, we didn't just have town meetings. We had a lot of paid advertising in competitive districts and in competitive states. So I'd argue that we're coming into this debate in August largely where we left it when Congress went out of session. I don't think it had much of an impact one way or the other. I do want to say one more thing. You know, it is absolutely the case that you have a bare majority, not a big majority, disapproving of Obama's handling of health care reform. But if you look at the individual items in health care reform, there's overwhelming support for it. This battle is far from over.
And Anna, as the pollster, I wanted to ask you, Black Caucus and the Latino Caucus, staunch members of the Progressive Coalition, say they will not vote for this unless it has the public option in it. How does this break down in terms, demographically, in terms of polling? Is the president holding his support among African Americans and Latinos? Is he losing support amongst whites?
He's, overall, he's holding his support among Democrats, and to some degree that includes a lot of African Americans and Hispanics, but Democrats has been very stable. Where you've seen some decline in support has been among independent voters.
Let's see if we can get a caller in on the conversation, and let's start with Sam. Sam with us from Charlotte.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call. My biggest concern right now with health care is to get a level playing field. When I was in corporate America, I left, and the company was paying my insurance. Then I left, went on COBRA. I was paying $450 a month for a $1,500 deductible. Then when I had to buy it on my own, all of a sudden, same person, I had to jump up to $1,200 a month for a $5,000 deductible. And the same thing happened. I went into public sector paying the school was paying my insurance, and then come out, and now my COBRA payment is $350 a month. Yeah, if I have to buy it on my own, it is all outrageous. I'm the same person either way.
Yeah, it depends on which group you're counted in, and that's the idea of setting up some of these exchanges. Matt Continetti, do you think that anything that will get approved by Congress would cover people like Sam?
Well, the Democrats certainly want to, and they want the intention of all these laws is to lower the prices, control the prices in the insurance individual insurance market. The problem is, though, from what I see, the means of doing that, let's take guaranteed issue, which is the insurance companies have to give it insurance plans to everyone. They can't deny people on the basis of pre-existing conditions, and then something called community rating, which is you cap the premiums based on everybody in the community, including young people and so on forth. New York State, for example, has both of those things, and they have extremely high, the most expensive individual insurance premiums in the nation. So that's a kind of internal tension that I think is defeating a lot of the Democrats' arguments.
And Anna, well, concern about costs is behind a lot of this.
I mean, a couple of things. They're talking about tax credits or subsidies so people can afford these premiums. So it's not that, you know, you're going to have sort of high premiums or high individual costs and then no one's going to be able to buy them. The idea is to make them affordable or give people the means to get them. And the other piece is not just about costs, it's about standardization so that you aren't sort of in this sort of situation where you leave jobs and all of a sudden, you know, what you can get access to is different than what you can get before. I mean, so the whole, it's more comprehensive than that. Cost is a huge issue, and I actually think one of the challenges that we faced as Democrats is not truly explain to people how it's going to bring down their costs. I believe it will, but I think that we have not done a good job explaining that to people.
Anna Greenberg is with us, also Matt Continetti, and of course, political junkie Ken Rudin. And we thank Sam for his phone call. Let's go next to Mike. Mike with us from LeGrand in Oregon.
Well, good morning. Glad to talk to you.
Good afternoon where we are, but we're willing to extend you the benefit of the doubt out there.
Look, what I'd like to do is very quickly bring this a personal anecdote. I worked 11 years at the same business. I started out with a $500 deductible. It's now up to $2,000. I left the business in the middle of 2004, went to work for a friend of mine, from a $50,000 a year job to minimum wage plus. No medical care whatsoever, none. If you, and this is what I don't hear people talking about, it's a totally naked feeling to have no medical care and not have enough money saved to cover yourself in case something happens. So there must be, in my opinion, there has to be, number one, portability. If you leave your job, get fired from your job, get laid off, get sick, you have to have medical care that moves either from your job that you had with the same coverage or something that will pick it up with at least equal coverage for the person. A person should, because you work, should not depend whether you live or die or get sick or well. That's my opinion. I want a public option to keep the insurance companies honest, but it's got to be something portable, Neil.
Anna Greenberg, I think portability is in every bill that I've seen.
That's right. I mean, a key argument that President Obama has been making and has to continue to make is about security. One of the ways this is going to impact people directly in the immediate term, because it's hard to bring down cost in the very immediate term, is that you have the security of knowing if you lose your job or you quit your job job or you want to do something else, that you're not going to lose your health insurance. That's the most direct impact of this reform.
And portability, Matt Continetti, I think is something that Republicans support as well.
Well, that's right. And of course, they just have a different avenue towards the issue. They want to make portability by having the individual own their insurance program rather than getting it through their employer. There are a whole host of ideas. I hope to see Obama really reach out across the aisle with medical malpractice. That's the key place, I think, where you could get bipartisan support.
In other words, if he was willing to compromise on tort reform.
Tort reform, capping lawsuits.
Then Republicans would be willing to compromise on what?
Well, on something.
Exactly.
Maybe not the public option, but maybe something else.
All right.
Am I still on the line?
Yes, but you have to make it quick. We need to get somebody else.
I think the tort reform is a red herring here. I think it's just an excuse to shoot this down. I don't think it's important, as people like me who work for a living need to be able to carry our insurance somewhere else, have the government provide it if we can't provide it, and keep the cost down. And I'll ring off on that one.
All right, very small soapbox for you there. Micah, you're listening to The Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email from Deb. You are misinterpreting the poll you mentioned. Just because voters disapprove of the way President Obama is handling health care reform does not mean voters disapprove of health care reform. And I think Anna did point that out. And whilst we're talking about the politics of health care reform, which has to do with that more than a little bit, this email from Emily. It should be illegal to discriminate against people with pre-existing conditions trying to buy private insurance, the same as it is illegal to discriminate in group plans. And again, Matt Continetti, I don't think that's controversial.
No, not at all. And, you know, I think if Obama had taken this issue from a different direction, maybe just focused on a few insurance reforms, like, say, the pre-existing, eliminating their ability to deny you on the basis of pre-existing conditions, or, say, getting rid of rescission, where sometimes these insurance companies drop people from the plans once they develop a condition. You know, I've heard from Representative Michael Sturgis, a conservative Republican physician from Texas, and he'll say, listen, you'd have overwhelming votes for those two things.
But Anna, he says this is the time for comprehensive health care reform. Reforms like that, less than half a loaf, I think he would say, right, aren't going to get to the real issues.
Well, I mean, those are real issues. And even if just those two things happen, that would be important reform. But you have issues of people who are uninsured, which is 41 million people. You also have the long-term economic cost of our healthcare system, which is going to be a huge – it is a problem now and will be an even bigger problem for our country economically.
Well, let's go to Steve in Flagstaff.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I'm thinking what – if the Democrats would – kind of drop the public plan thing and just offer everybody Medicare. And
Relabel it, in other words.
Relabel it. Call it Medicare for everybody. Everybody's familiar with Medicare. Everybody knows somebody that's on Medicare. And then just, you know, have a payroll tax and everybody pays in.
Well, Ken, probably a little late in the game to talk about relabeling things, don't
right.
you?
Right. I mean, I don't mean to be anti-semantic, but exactly right. You don't want to do that. But what I'm curious about, if I can, from day one, it seemed like Barack Obama did not want to repeat the mistake of the Clintons, that Clintons, it was my way or the highway, they did it their way, whereas Barack Obama let Congress do it. Talking to both of you, do you think that he made a mistake in giving Congress the first step?
I don't think he made a mistake. I think it actually made a lot of sense. I think where, and frankly, he said this himself, I believe, yesterday or the day before, I think where he could have been stronger was to articulate clearly at least some core principles that had to be in a reform package, which both he could sort of promulgate, but that others could also rally around. Instead, you know, in his attempt to keep sort of all options on the table and not shut down any particular avenue for reform, it was a little bit confusing about what he was for. And so I think that this speech tonight is actually, I think, an attempt to do exactly what I'm talking about. And again, he sort of said himself, I haven't been clear enough about what it is I'm for.
I think the Obama White House was so focused on not repeating the Clinton White House's tactical mistakes that they may have overlooked the larger strategic issue. And that is, a lot of Americans who already have health insurance are very leery about kind of, fiddling around with these institutional arrangements. And so as soon as you start talking about so complex a topic as health care, and also one that's so personal, right? And this is why Sarah Palin was able to affect this debate in such a visceral way in the summer. As soon as you start talking about that, you get people leery, and it becomes a real political trial for you, I think.
I just don't understand how you're going to get reform without messing around with these institutions. I don't think that that is a mistake on his part. I think that's the reality
of this. Do people really
process.
Believe that doing nothing is not an option?
Well, no, if
you still have very large majorities of people saying we either have to have fundamental overhaul
I'm
or major change in the system.
Look at the George W. Bush experience where he wanted fundamental reform of Social Security. If you look back on that process now, I think a lot of Republicans would tell you, no, the mistake was you should go for incremental reforms. And, of course, we spent all this time hearing that Obama was a gradualist. He's not so gradual on health care.
Well, we'll see what he has to say tonight. Live coverage on all of these NPR stations, I'm pretty sure. Our thanks to Matt Continetti, the Weekly Standard. Our thanks to Anna Greenberg of Greenberg Quinlan Rossner, a Democratic pollster. And as always, our thanks to political junkie Ken Rudin, who joined us all here in Studio 3A. Coming up, the dramatic and costly rescue this morning of a New York Times reporter held captive in Afghanistan. Executive editor Bill Keller will join us. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.